Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't you forget
my number. Welcome back, guys. DJS 212. You got something in it, so can you say? So, you can imagine being in my situation or our situation on the air and something like this happens. About all you can do is give you updates and kind of state the obvious, which is in America, and this is, I'm not blaming this on Trump. I'm not blaming this on the right. I'm not blaming it on anyone other than the person who pulled the trigger in Utah and just shot Charlie Kirk in the neck. That's the person responsible. But we need grown-ups to be grown-ups. We need leaders to be leaders. And we need to lower the temperature overall in this country. And we need to get back or get to the point where the ancient Greeks were thousands of years ago, where you settle your differences and you best your opponent with words and logic. And in the absence of that, that's when you punch them, because you don't have the words and logic. You don't have the emotional intelligence and the brain power to defeat someone with your words and logic. And that is my biggest worry. I hope Charlie Kirk is okay. I hope it's superficial, or at least doesn't lead to the young man dying. I don't agree with anything he says. We're on opposite ends of the political spectrum. I will say this, that I have always respected the fact that he goes out into crowds of young people and takes every question and debates every person. That is laudable. That is what you should do, to take people on with words and logic. And in the absence of that, that's when you see people doing things like this. Now, the person who pulled the trigger could be, probably is, some sort of crazy person. You have to be to do something like this. It is horrific that it happened in front of hundreds or thousands of 18 to 22-year-olds. That's, you know, life-changing and scarring for the rest of your life. But yeah, about all I can do is add my words to the obvious, which is this is not what you do ever, and it's certainly not what you do in America. Thoughts?
Totally agree. We're not supposed to. We don't settle things this way in civilized countries. It doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree with the person that is doing the shooting or the one being shot. That none of that matters. It's just not how you do it. You don't do. We're not about summary execution. We're not about shooting people we disagree with. And what's fascinating, though, and again, we have to understand that the majority of Americans are not actually on social media, right? I think it's something like 20%. So 1 in 5 people are on things like Twitter or whatever. But even this early, the reactions are inflammatory. It's nonstop. It's us against them, and it's not. This guy shot Charlie Kirk. It's they shot him. And we've been doing this over and over and over again, blaming a group of people, again, regardless of which side you want to point a finger at, rather than blaming the person that did the thing.
I'm going to say something that might be taken controversially. You guys might disagree. Please tell me if you do. I would push back a little bit, and I would say the real problem is that this is actually what we do here. This, like, to say, like, oh, we don't handle things like this. This is not what we do here in America. This is actually what we do here in America. This is the only country where this sort of thing happens all of the time on, like, a weekly basis, to the point where, you know, you have to, like, in your head, you have to, when you read about, like, a school shooting, you have to pay it. You have to care about how many people were shot to know how much you, like, attention you have to give it in your brain. Like, this is, these things don't happen in other places, but they do happen here. This is what happens here in America. And that, I think, is like the core problem. And we were sort of talking on the break about how it's just, it's escalation on top of escalation. Violence gets answered by violence, gets answered by violence, gets answered by more rhetoric, gets answered by heavier rhetoric, gets answered by just more and more tensions, more and more bottling up, more and more people just getting madder and madder about whatever from whatever political source or whatever side. We've seen a couple times, sometimes, a lot of times these shooters are even just apolitical. They don't even know what they believe. They're just mad and freaking out, and they have these, you know, mental illnesses or whatever that are causing them to react like this. And it is what we do here. And it's really, really, I just don't feel like we can pretend that it's not anymore. I don't feel like we can pretend that we're better.
Because these are two different things. We are a violent country. We are not a politically violent country historically or even in recent times. And it's been a long, I mean, like, we have it happen, but it's the rare occasion when political violence pops up. The other violence is daily, whether it's a school shooting or it's a gang shooting or it's a domestic shooting, you know, murder, suicide. You're totally right about all that. They're different things.
I don't draw a big line between, like, a school child and a political commentator getting shot. I don't draw a big line between those things.
There's, in one sense, there's no line. In another sense,
we had the president assassinated last year. How can you say we don't have political violence?
That's the point. This is not how you settle things in politics. It's not how you should settle things anywhere.
It shouldn't be.
Andrew. Two examples in 20 years is not saying we do this. It's actually the proof that we don't. We don't have regular political violence in the United States. It has ramped up, which is what we're all talking about, because we do nothing. Nobody pushes the brake. It's all gas, no brakes in politics right now. And the problem with this, as opposed to more random acts of violence or even specific acts of violence, I don't like you, I shoot you. The difference when it becomes political is that it's pitting half the country against the other half of the country. It's pitting people that are not even willing participants in it. It's not about a value of the victim or a devaluation of the crime. It's just a much broader risk when you're going to have it become political, because what you're by nature doing is splitting the country in half and making each group of people think the other side wants to shoot them.
I think we have had plenty of political assassinations in this country and an actual nationwide civil war. And I don't think
that was 200 years ago.
But it happened. We are supposed to be. The country's only like 200 years old, man. We are supposed to be.
Andrew.
The first world country. We are supposed to be the number one country in the world.
You cannot compare 1870 to 2025. They're not the same world.
I don't even really understand what you are arguing right now. Charlie Kirk was just shot in the neck, man. What are you arguing about how there's not political violence?
Andrew, that's not the point. When Dave and I said this is not how we do it, that means this is not how you're supposed to do it. It shouldn't take a translation to figure that out.
I don't think you can argue that when Charlie Kirk was just shot,
Andrew,
in the neck, Kevin.
Brother, you got to listen.
I'm listening to you. I'm not agreeing with you.
What we're talking about is whether or not it should be the way it's done. When we say we don't do things that way, it's that we shouldn't.
You didn't say shouldn't. You said we don't.
Dude, you got to figure context out, brother.
Whatever, but this is one of the reasons why we do this on KMOX. We jack around, we have fun, we laugh, we cross swords. But on days like this, when something big happens, we're here to cover it and to give our analysis, right or wrong. Charlie Kirk, the right-wing political activist pundit, has been shot at a university in Utah. It was all caught on film by about 1,000 different phone cameras. And Wheels just showed us one view that is really, really bad, where you see a huge amount of blood come out the other side of this guy's neck. And I'm worried this is going to be bad.
I mean, it looks bad. So.
Hope not. You hope somebody got to him pretty quickly. Yeah. But the up close video. I mean, don't seek it out if you're not good with those types of things. And obviously, it's good because it's going to be on making the rounds on social media. You'll see it inadvertently. Just be aware that anything related to that can be disturbing if you're not ready for it.
Well, and that's the thing. When things like this happen, when violence unfolds and it is caught on cell phone camera and then is uploaded to the internet, it ends up traumatizing even more people who were like present for the event. That's something I don't think we talk about enough is like these footage like that will get played on the news over and over again without warning. And just, I don't know, the effects of these selfish actions that come from a gunman like this, you're not just hurting the one person, you're hurting millions of people, actually. I mean, I hope that's not like a...
No, you are affecting what Andrew and Wheels were debating, which is every act like this is a brick in the wall of being a violent country.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And again, I can't stress this enough, and I also, going back to Rachel's initial point when we were talking about politics in the 1 o'clock, of feeling so emasculated, and there's nothing you can do when people are doing these things politically that you don't like, and there's just, you know, but we have to know that, we have to accept that, and we have to fight against our darker urges to do something outside of words and logic. Because that's probably, in addition to mental health, why this person who just shot Charlie Kirk thinks he shot Charlie Kirk is because, well, there's nothing else I can do. And from the way our leaders lead, from the way our leaders speak, the way we treat each other, the things we say on social media, it's not just platitudes. It's not just, you know, empty. It's not just, you know, prayer thoughts and prayers. It's we have to do better. We just have to do better. Yeah.
Yeah. I to that point, Andrew's 100% right in the sense that too much of how we do things is that way, is violent. For whatever the reasons are. Sometimes it's political, sometimes it's not. But now it's bleeding over, but it's that constant ramping up that's going to make it worse if we don't cut it off.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. We're covering this story about Charlie Kirk. We'll be covering it until 5 p.m. And as long as it takes to get more information, as we do, we'll let you know. And if Michael Calhoun needs to break in at any time, just know that it doesn't matter what we're doing. Michael's the boss, and he'll say he needs to go on air, and we'll put him on air. Until then, we're going to go ahead with the show as we normally do and have our guests on. And right now, we're going to try and do a little bit of good. We have Deanna Rozek in, and we have Debbie Schultz. Debbie is a Bennett Project board member, and Deanna's daughter, Everly, is fighting leukemia. It's nice to meet both of you.
Thank you for having us on.
Let me start with you, Deanna. Just introduce yourself and tell us your story.
Sure. My name's Deanna. My daughter was diagnosed at 3 years old with leukemia. She's been in treatment at Cardinal Glennon since then. So we spent all of December 2023 and into January in treatment at the hospital. She's gone through treatment so far and is doing pretty well. She just got cleared to go to pre-K, so she's got that, and she'll be hopefully through treatment in the spring of 2026.
How did it manifest? How did it present?
Yeah, so she had like back-to-back ear infections, trouble with sleep. We went to pediatrician multiple times. They checked her iron levels, and that kind of was funky, and they said, you know, we'll try to keep her iron up, come back in 3 months, and we'll check levels again. After a couple weeks, we we noticed lymph nodes. We're like, nope, we need to do a blood. We need to check now versus waiting. And fought them a little bit on it. The next day, got a call, said pack a bag and plan to be at Glennon for a bit. And we were there for like a month and a half.
Good parenting.
Yeah.
So anything that we ask you that's too personal or too painful, you tell us to shut the F up. but what is that? It's every parent's nightmare, mm-hmm. literally. Yeah. What was that evolution like from suspicion to fear to, we're facing this?
Yeah. It almost just alters your brain chemistry. I mean, I have life before cancer and life after cancer. And everything, it's just a season of hard, and it's getting through the hard. And we have our family who's very close by, which is great. Being close to the St. Louis hospitals is a blessing that we just kind of take advantage of. So many families don't have that. And just leaning into our family and our church has been really supportive as well. And obviously organizations like Bennett Project, has been such an outlet just to connect with other families that are walking through it is vital.
How's Everly? Does she understand?
No, she doesn't. So we kind of have that going for us because she was 3 when she was diagnosed. Like, I don't think that one, she doesn't realize that she missed out on so much. And we had to isolate for a year. So she didn't get to start pre-K when she should have, but she also didn't miss out on, third grade, fourth grade. She's, it's not, that's not everyone's experience. So she doesn't really realize that she's got this going on and that it's different from what other kids are experiencing. And we've kind of sheltered her as much as we can. I mean, obviously, appointments are still brutal. There's no way to diminish that. But I don't think that she's really realized how different her life is.
How's Cardinal Glennon?
Great. Yeah, we've had a really good experience at Glennon. From the doctors, the nurses, Costa Center Bob Costas, I think, donated a decent amount to have that. And that center has been awesome. We do all of her appointments there, all of her labs. So we're on the east side. So we make the trip over across the river. Right now, she's only going once a month. Mm-hmm. So we were going 3 to 4 times a week. So, but Cardinal Glennon has been great.
Debbie, tell us about Bennett Project.
So the Bennett Project is a fully volunteer run, not for profit, and we serve families who are in treatment in the St. Louis area at any of the 3 pediatric oncology centers. We believe really strongly that no one understands the journey like someone who has walked it. And so we have a really strong focus on connecting our families to each other. We do a lot of social events, and so we bring our families together. We also have a private Facebook group where families can connect with one another, ask questions, get information from other families, so that we can support one another through what is hopefully the worst time of their life that's only going to get better. Yeah.
And what's your connection? How did you get involved?
So I got involved with the Bennett Project in 2019, shortly after it got started. My nephew was diagnosed with a brain tumor. And when we were done with the first round of treatment, his first battle, I looked for a way to give back. I needed some way to process and figure out like this experience we had been through. And the Bennett Project was a really small grassroots organization. And I thought, I can make a difference here. We are on battle number 5 with my nephew, Drew. And it's the families that we've met through the Bennett Project that are the ones who are there for us every day. And so being able to give back to other families like ours has been huge. Our kids' friends are the kids from the Bennett Project, right? Mm-hmm. My nephew and his little brother, like that's where they feel the most comfortable, because those families understand their journey too.
Yeah. You have a fundraiser coming up in a few weeks.
We do. So we are going to be launching our online silent auction in early October. So we'll have baskets and gift certificates from companies all around the city. We try to cover a good range of the city in our program, so we get support from everywhere. And we'll be launching that on our website probably the second week of October is what we're looking at. And shortly after, we do a very large toy drive. So we will have 50 to 60 toy drive locations across the metro on the Illinois side, all the way out in West County, kind of everywhere we go. And we use those toys for our big holiday event. We bring our families in to shop for gifts free of charge. And then we also use them to supply the local oncology centers throughout the year.
Yeah. What kind of, we have a lot of people listening right now. What kind of things can you guys use for silent auctions or otherwise?
Yeah. So for the auction, we really look for anything like fun baskets, tickets, gift cards. We're really kind of open to anything. It's been a really lovely thing to see the community rise and help these families through the darkness. And so we're really kind of open to any kind of cool things for folks. We can be reached through our website, which is thependentproject.org, two N's, two T's. Mm-hmm. And we are so grateful for the community support that we get.
Yeah, we'll get you something. What advice would you have for parents who are going through this or for parents who will go through this?
Mm-hmm. Just to get connected, whether that's through your local hospital, Child Life, and the social workers can help, but also just get plugged in. Once you, obviously, depending on ability, and you know, I think you reach out with multiple events that we just had to say, like, nope, it's still too dangerous for us to, like, be out there just yet and have her out with other kids. We had to keep her pretty safe. But once you're able to, just get connected, get plugged in. Even if it's not in-person events, there's so many. I mean, just the Facebook group alone has been a wealth of knowledge. Just get connected with other families.
Well, we will hook you up with a really great prize for your online auction. All the best to Everly. All the best to your nephew.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Wednesday to you. My very dear friend Tamara Keefe is here from Clementine's. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
You look more beautiful than last time I saw you.
He's so nice.
Yeah, sucking up. You do, though. You look fantastic. You look happy.
I don't have to suck up with you.
Okay, good. We're just on that level.
We're just on that level.
So things are great?
Things are really good. Really good. Exciting times. We open in Kansas City next week.
Good.
So that's happening. And then we're opening in Bentonville in October. Yeah. So things are busy. We're making ice cream, you know, going into new markets. It's exciting.
Is it to the point now nationally that you no longer have to introduce yourself? Like people, they hear Clementine's, they kind of know?
No, I mean, it depends. Like, if you're in the, like, the foodie world and ice cream and culinary, you probably know who Clementine's is. But, you know, when we go into new markets and new cities, right, we have to do that education. And I say, like, we win one scoop at a time. I just have to get it in their mouth.
There you go. Yeah. I've been saying that for years. What's your big sell? Like, if you had an elevator pitch, like, what is it about your ice cream that you want to tell someone in an elevator?
You know, we're one of only a handful of micro creameries in the country, and we literally make the best ice cream in the United States of America, and we win all of the awards, and you should try it, mm-hmm. right? Like, no one makes ice cream like we do. We have the boozy, the naughty mm-hmm. ice creams, and we were the first ice cream company in the country, actually, to make a non-dairy vegan ice cream at mass.
Yeah.
Right? To make non-dairy actually tastes like ice cream.
Which is really good. Yeah.
Which is really, really amazing and really important for people who can't have dairy but deserve to have ice cream in their life.
I think you have, it's all going to be dirty. I think you have a special tongue. Do you think you have a special tongue?
Like, that's what he says.
You come up with these.
Yeah, I'm actually a master taster. I didn't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
I am culinary and sensory science trained. So I do.
So you literally do.
I literally do. I was trained to be a master taster. And so it really is important to get the flavors right, to mm-hmm. get the consistency, the texture, the aftertaste, the sophistication of how a flavor builds when it's on your tongue and in your mouth. It's like really important. And to make sure that that flavor and the butterfat, which carries that flavor in your mouth, like carries it all the way there.
Yeah. Can you imagine people from like 50 years ago tasting this? Or would it be closer to what they did?
You know, it was probably closer to the ice cream that is like the way that our grandparents used to make ice cream. It's all natural. It's clean label. It doesn't have all the artificial garbage in it the way that most ice creams today do.
And you guys are always doing something fun and different, and you have embraced cryptids, which I love.
We have.
I mean, I've been into this for 25 years in Paranormal Tuesday and the Halloween show and Bigfoot and the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And as you have learned, a huge amount of people are.
I had no idea how many people were into cryptids.
Yeah.
And so when somebody on the team said, we need to come out with like a cryptids line, I was like, a what? And so then I got into it and I was like, oh, this is fun. I'm going to have fun. A good time making flavors for this, for sure.
Yeah. How do you, I mean, $64,000 question, but how do you do it? Like, once you have an idea and it's like past the idea stage, how do you do it? Do you just like sit down, make notes, just grab a bunch of ingredients and go to town?
Sometimes. It's really about like doing the research and like, okay, like for, you know, one of the cryptids, like, okay, for Bigfoot, right? Like, what would, if I was a flavor as Bigfoot, like what would I be, right? So you think of like the forest, and I thought, oh, it's got to be chocolate in the forest, and then you have to have the almonds. Like, it just kind of comes to you when you start researching an idea for a flavor. It's like, okay, I want to try this, and I want to try that, and you just kind of figure out what, like, resonates, right? Mm-hmm. Or doing Mothman, right? Like, it had to be black, right? So I had to come up with a flavor where I could use the activated charcoal and I could use the what was at my fingertips to make a really cool black ice cream that would resonate.
Yeah.
So,
which doesn't sound easy.
It's not. It's not. It takes time. You know, I thankfully have an R&D chef who helps me now because I don't have the time like I used to have because I'm running the business and growing and expanding it. But it's actually still like the best part of my job is the creative part.
Right.
Because I don't get to do it a lot. So I kind of try to like still insert myself where I can. And
what is your go-to? What does Tamara grab when you're going to eat Clementines? And then what flavor are you most proud of over the years?
Oh my gosh.
Like you really nailed it.
Well, for sure, gooey butter cake ice cream. Right. Like I made it famous. I invented it. Like all my national competitors all try to make their version of it, which all stinks compared to ours. So I'm actually really proud of that because I was able to take something that was so St. Louis and blow it up on a national scale. And now if you go to like Podunk, Idaho into an ice cream shop, like that ice cream shop follower has been following me and has made their own version of that gooey butter cake. And so I think that's cool. I'm really proud of that because so many cool, great things happen in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And if I can put St. Louis on the map in the culinary world and, you know, spread the gooey butter cake wonderfulness across the country, like, I think that's pretty darn cool.
Well, you and Katie are now two of our biggest ambassadors. I mean, you really are. I mean, you guys are out there killing it.
We're trying.
Yeah.
And we love each other, too. So
good. I didn't know that.
Yeah. We're friends. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Just personally, what has this journey been like? Because I don't know where you were before this, but now I know you're very successful. And just what's that like just as a life experience?
You know, it's amazing, right? Because I was that mid-career changer, right? Like I was 38 when I decided to leave my corporate life of 20 years and start Clementines and literally bet the farm. Mm-hmm. You know, like bet everything on it. And I think it was very exciting for me then, right? To be like doing something so crazy and like totally just following my passion. And I think, you know, I always said like in my early years, it was very much about me, right? Like what I was doing, my parlors, my ice cream, it was very me. And I think that somewhere along the way, maybe like parlor 3 or 4, it changed. So you know, I'm still the face of Clementines, but Clementines is not about me anymore. It really is about my team. It's about what we're doing in St. Louis. It's about the 238 families that are supported every time you come into a Clementines. Mm-hmm. Like, it just has, my journey has changed so much that it's okay. I'm more motivated to grow this thing for the opportunities we can provide people by doing that. And by elevating, like, a cool, cool, great thing that is going on in St. Louis. Like, I think we hear enough about like the bad things in St. Louis, but I don't think we talk enough about the really good things that happen in St. Louis. And if Clementines can be one of those really, really good things that people continue to talk about and talk about, then I think I'm kind of doing my job, right? Like, I think that's really important. I think it's funny because I'm not from St. Louis. And so when I came to St. Louis kind of kicking and screaming, I really literally say within 6 months, I found my one true love, and that's the city of St. Louis. St. Louis is this incredible, incredible city that's so vibrant, so many neighborhoods. I just wish the people who were from here knew what a great city St. Louis was.
You're so right.
So people from the outside can see it, but not always the people who are born and raised here see it. And that's really unfortunate because sometimes we're our own worst critic. Yeah. And we really just like, I mean, I'll tell you from an outsider's perspective, I've never seen a city in the country who spends their tax dollars at work. Our zoo is free. The Science Center is free. The Muni, you know, has 1,500 seats in perputuity that's free. We have the second best opera company in the country. Our art scene is amazing. Our parks are amazing. Our program around the city, and it's all free. The cost of living in St. Louis is really incredible. I mean, you can have your family and like be busy every single night in the summer for free and do something around this town. Like, I just think St. Louis has so much going for it. It's just, it's really powerful. It's really incredible.
Keep doing it. We love you. We're really proud of you.
Thank you.
We really are. It's great.
Thank you.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.